Albert, I maintain that Baker Mayfield is in almost a lose-lose situation. With, you know, the latest thing today, a lot of people ran with you know, that he had to answer the question about the fans and about what happened with the Bills game on Sunday. And yes, he brought on that answer himself on Sunday. But on Tuesday, when asked, hey, clarify your comments, all he did was clarify. If he would have said, I'm on to Pittsburgh, everyone would have said, well, what a jerk. What's he doing not answering the questions?
Yeah, I actually didn't catch this. What did he say?
He just clarified and said, listen, you know, if I'm in front of our home audience, our home fans, I expect you guys to be quiet. It was too loud in the red zone.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that – I mean, honestly, like, I don't have a problem with that. Like, that's pretty standard stuff. I think people in Cleveland – it's a good football town. People in Cleveland, I think most of the guys, people in the stands understand that. Like, I don't know – I mean, like, you guys have had a lot of legitimate controversies there over the years. I don't know, but like, when I saw people kind of getting up in arms over that, I understand that, like, they haven't played all that well, and he personally hasn't played all that well this year, and so maybe you lose the right to say certain things, but I didn't think that was crazy at all.
Yeah, I don't think it's that crazy. I think he wants the Browns fans and for a home game to be a home field advantage. You know?
Yeah.
He's trying to score more points.
I can tell you this. I can tell you guys this. I remember covering, like, games in Indianapolis when Peyton Manning was there. And, like, this was even in the old Hoosier Dome, the RCA Dome, whatever they were calling it at the time, then the Lucas Oil. That stadium, the old stadium could get really loud. The new stadium can get pretty loud. And it was like being in church on when the Colts had the ball. I mean, they had the signs up on the scoreboards telling fans to be quiet, and you could literally hear, like, you could hear exactly what Peyton Manning was saying. You know, like, you could make it out. It was really, really crazy. And so I think, like, ideally that's, like, what all quarterbacks want, right? Like, when they're at home, that's supposed to be an advantage. And so having the ability to communicate is part of that.
Yeah, and with Baker, you know what, over the past couple of weeks, he's looked a lot better, too. You know, completing 66% of his passes, no turnovers, 3 touchdowns, 95 passer rating. Like, he's improved. We'll put it that way. He's improved. He's looked better. Is this something that maybe you can see where once he starts to improve and show that consistently, he'll resort back to what we saw with Baker, you know, entering week one, entering week two, entering three, where he just was filled with confidence, but also came off a little bit arrogant as well in the process?
Yeah, I mean, this is a balance, and I've actually thought a lot about this because I'm on with you guys every week, and so I do think it's important for the guy to be himself, and I understand why he looks at it as, well, this is sort of my formula, you know, like, this is what's got me where I am, and this is who I am, and if I'm not this way, it just sort of takes away from everything that's got me where I am, and I understand that, but it's interesting, guys. I've sort of thought a little bit more about this. And to me, what's fascinating about the position the quarterback's in, and I sort of think about Baker the college player versus Baker the NFL player, it just answer these questions for me. Who's the highest paid player? Who's the highest paid person in a college football program?
The head coach.
The coach.
Who's the highest paid guy in, you know, an NFL's football program?
Quarterback.
The quarterback, right. And so I think, like, quarterbacks in college can get away with a little bit more, because the idea is that the team embodies the coach, right? Like, the team embodies whoever the coach is. And I think, you know, like, when Ohio State was at their best, they embodied Urban Meyer. Alabama, I think, over the last 10 years has embodied Nick Saban. It's the way it is at the college level. And then, you know, you look at the pro level, and a lot of times the team embodies the quarterback. And I think you see that with a lot of different teams, you know, especially the really good ones. And so, you know, I think that's going to be part of, like, the growing process for Baker, is understanding, you know, that now that he's, you know, in the NFL, and now that he's in that position as the quarterback, you know, eventually, when the team gets where it wants to be, that it's going to have to take on his personality. And I think, you know, in certain ways, you saw some of the recklessness of Baker's personality and the rest of the team early in the year. And I think, you know, the more he sort of learns to harness that a certain way, the more helpful it can be to his teammates. And so I think part of that's going to be a growing process for him, is just sort of understanding and accepting the responsibility that comes with being an NFL quarterback. Maybe what makes him successful personally works for him, and that's fine. But he's got to understand that, like, when you're in that position, in that league, you're responsible for more than just that. It's one of the reasons why you make the big bucks, is because you are seen as somebody who is supposed to lift the people around him and rub off on the people around him. And so I really think that, so, you know, part of this is going to be on Baker to just sort of learn and accept that responsibility. We've seen other guys not accept that responsibility in the past. It doesn't work out very well for them in the long run. And so I think Baker's smart enough to recognize that. And eventually, I think, you know, he's going to get there where, you know, he's able to harness all that stuff in a positive way.
Albert, there's a couple odd things. You know, I was at the game on Sunday, and as I was leaving, I don't stay and do the press conferences or anything. I just bolt out of there. And I left maybe 10 minutes after the game ended. And I walked out, and I walked out with Antonio Callaway. And then he made his way. You know, he didn't park in the under area where everyone parks. He made his way to the parking where sometimes the media is at and other people, just right across the street, right across the way there. And I thought it was odd. And then we got the report from Mary Kay Cabot that Antonio Callaway was late and then was blaming the fact that he didn't have the right parking as to why he was late. One game suspension from Freddie, the whole situation seems odd. Is there any clarity there, or is this just something that it's just one game and you move on?
I think it's one game and you move on. I mean, like, listen, this is a player who, and I don't think you can separate his past from where he is right now. This is a guy who came into the league with issues. This is a guy who had issues his first summer in the NFL. And so, you know, I think with a player like that, you have to have less tolerance for slip ups. And, you know, once he earns it back, you know, maybe an excuse like that's acceptable. But I think as far as this goes, like, you know, based on his history, there's very little question why you would come down on him in a situation like this. And so, you know, look, I can remember examples from the past in the NFL where there was every excuse in the world for a player to be late. I've seen it happen with snowstorms, guys, where, you know, guys are late because it's, and I remember this happening in New England 10 years ago. There were four players that were late. Randy Moss was one of them. And there was a driving snowstorm in New England. And I think those guys were like 5 minutes late, and Belichick threw them all out of the building, right? And a couple of those guys took real offense to it and everything else. And the point Belichick made was, you live in New England, you should understand that when it snows, you need to give yourself extra time to get in here. So there's no excuse. Like, you don't, it's not my job to manage that for you. It's your job to manage that within the confines of the rules of the team. And so that's where, you know, I think something like that comes in, where if you're a guy who, you know, already knows that he's on this, you know, low tolerance policy, right? Like, whether it's zero tolerance, whatever, he's on this low tolerance policy because of his past actions. He has to understand that, you know, that there's that if he is late for certain things, or if he does miss certain things, excuses aren't going to be acceptable. I just sort of think with a player like that, that's the way you have to operate. So I don't blame Freddie at all for coming down on a player like that.
Albert, what's up with this Kaepernick story? You think this is real? You think he's going to get a shot to get back in the league?
I think this is the league saying put up or shut up. That's what I think. I mean, I personally look at it as, I think the league is sick of, you know, every time a backup quarterback looks terrible in the game, every time, you know, some guy nobody has ever heard of at the position signs somewhere, I think the league's sick of hearing about it. You know, like, in every single time that happens, it's like, well, what about Kaepernick? What about Kaepernick? And I think the league's sick of hearing that they're complicit in it, because I really don't think they are. Like, I don't think that this has anything to do with the league office. You know, I think it's complicated and there are different things involved, but I don't think there's any formal blackballing going on. And so, you know, the league's taking an unprecedented step here to facilitate a workout for him, basically a one-man combine, and say, okay, you say you've been working out for 3 years, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, whatever it is, then, like, let's see where you're at. You want workouts with teams, we'll bring every single team here. And so, you know, is it the ideal setting? Whatever, no, maybe not. But, you know, Colin Kaepernick's been asking to be in front of NFL evaluators for 3 years. They're giving him exactly what he wants. And, you know, they're giving him a chance to put on a show for all 32 teams. And I think, as much as anything, this is about the league saying to Kaepernick, and the same to the public, like, look, like, we're trying. Like, if this guy's good enough, he will get a job. And right now, like, we're going to do something and go the extra mile to try to provide him with the opportunity to show everyone that he's worthy of getting a job. And by the way, guys, I think the league would love for him to sign with a team right now. I think that's the ideal outcome for them.
Really? Because I was trying to think about the time. Is the timing odd to you at all in this?
I mean, I just think you know, it's a number of different things that have happened, you know, over the course of the last year or so. There's the lawsuit, of course, and, you know, again, the different backup quarterback situations. I think the Ravens, like, you know, they're winning with, you know, Kaepernick's old offensive coordinator, which I think certainly has an effect on it. Like, there's just a number of different things that have happened here, and I don't know if there, like there may have been some sort of trigger over the last few days that I'm just not aware of yet. And maybe there was, I don't know. But, you know, I think it was as much as anything else, sort of a culmination of the league having to hear for the last 2 years about how, you know, they're evil and the devil for all this stuff when, you know, really, like, I don't think that there was any sort of formal edict that he can't play in the NFL. I just think it was individual teams making a decision on it.
Albert, Buckeyes moved to 2. No big deal, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal, although it is a little annoying, isn't it? I mean, you win by 59 points. You know what was the most annoying thing to me? The most annoying thing to me about last night, how did Texas all of a sudden pop up at 19? Do you guys notice that?
Well, yeah, and then there's, some things that make you scratch your head, too, like Baylor's getting disrespected.
Right.
Minnesota's getting disrespected. And yeah, they clearly want 2 SEC teams in this by the precedent they're sending here.
Well, I mean, like, Texas going – so Texas is unranked, right? They beat K-State, who is also unranked, mm-hmm. by 3 points at home. And all of a sudden, they go from being unranked to 19th. Why do they go to 19th? Well, okay, so now LSU has another top 20 win, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like Texas rose up to 19 in the rankings to validate LSU jumping Ohio State, going from 2-1. It's little stuff like that that's just – it's just obnoxious. You know what I mean? Like, and you know that they're sitting in the meeting and they don't think anybody's going to notice it, but it helps them on the TV show explain why LSU is moving up. Because they, you know, Texas is a name brand and it's easy for everybody to think, oh, well, that's a big win when Texas hasn't had this great year. I also hear a lot of people talking about what a great win Georgia had over Notre Dame, right? But Michigan beat Notre Dame a lot worse than Georgia did, and that hasn't helped Michigan a lot in the rankings, has it?
No.
Right. It doesn't count the same for some reason. It's just the pretzel logic is unbelievable. And so, I've come to accept the fact that there are going to be 2 SEC teams there. I don't know, man. Like, what do you think? I mean,
all
I think
that matters, Albert, is that Ohio State just went out and you go. And then you take care of business. Frankly,
and then we'll be in New Orleans on January 12th.
I'd rather face Alabama in the first round.
Or somebody else. Like, honestly, who have they beaten?
I don't know how good they are.
I think
LSU's really, really good.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, there's just so many NFL players on both those teams, but I don't know. LSU scares me. That's the team that really scares me.
Yeah, yeah. But Ohio State, I mean, do you guys realize Ohio State's closest game is Florida Atlantic?
Yeah, they're the only team that covered the spread, I think, right?
It is the closest game, 24 points. I mean, I'll tell you this, like, and, you know, it's been 21 years since my freshman year there. So I've seen every game at least since then. And I don't know if I've ever seen a team that looks this way. I mean, that game on Saturday, that looked like a controlled scrimmage. I mean, it really did. And I don't feel like I'm exaggerating either. I mean, it felt like Ryan Day was running a practice out there.
Should Chase Young give the NCAA like a holiday card or something for letting him sit out 2 meaningless games and just remain healthy? And then here we go. You're ready for Penn State?
Hell, I'm going to send him a holiday card. Thank you very much. 3 weeks off and then an angry Chase Young coming to Penn State. I like that.
It'll be the perfect thing. Albert, thank you for your time. We appreciate the insight as always. We'll catch up with you next week.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
See you, Albert.
Thanks so much. It's Albert.